from Pacifica Radio. This is Democracy Now! Today, a look at globalization of grassroots resistance from Salem, Massachusetts to rural Colombia, as residents of Salem take to the streets against a major coal power plant of PG&E and the Colombian military and police relocate indigenous Afro-Colombians to make way for the largest coal strip mine in Latin America, with the coal to be sent to Salem. Also, part two of the war stories of journalist John Alpert. As he covers wars around the world, he must also battle with the networks to run his footage. All that and more coming up on Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The Palestinian leadership said in a statement today that Israel's incursions into the West Bank and Gaza Strip aim to destroy all signed agreements and terrorize the Palestinian people. It said, quote, "The reoccupation reiterates that the true goal of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's government is to destroy all signed agreements and escalate on a daily basis its policy of terror, assassinations, and reoccupation of parts of the Palestinian homeland. Israeli troops seized positions in Palestinian-ruled Beit Jala today and sent bulldozers into a refugee camp in southern Gaza, only hours after Israel assassinated a top Palestinian leader. A Palestinian security officer was killed and seven people were wounded as Israeli troops surged into Beit Jala, a West Bank town facing the Jewish settlement of Gilo, which Israel says is a neighborhood of Jerusalem. A Palestinian official condemned the early morning raid following on the heels of the killing of Abu Ali Mustafa, whom Israel accused of masterminding bombings as a reoccupation of Palestinian areas, paving the way for a Middle East war. And this news from Honduras. An international forensic team began digging yesterday at a former base of the U.S.-backed Nicaraguan Contras that may hold remains of leftists who disappeared during the Contra War and were presumed dead, including a U.S. priest and an ex-Green Beret. The anthropologists, including one from the United States and four Guatemalans, began work near a hospital that once served the El Aguacate Contra base, 85 miles east of the capital Tegucigalpa. They're seeking remains of members of a rebel Honduran group loosely affiliated with Nicaragua's Sandinista government. The group was killed in 1993 by Honduran troops with U.S. logistics support. Rights workers say rebel supporters James Carney, a U.S. Jesuit priest, and Arturo Baez, a nationalized U.S. citizen born in Nicaragua who served in the Green Berets before returning to his homeland, were captured and brought to the base to be interrogated. They disappeared along with Honduran rebel chief Jose Maria Reyes. This news from Peru. The Congress has unanimously voted to charge ex-President Alberto Fujimori with responsibility for two massacres by an army death squad, a move the government said will boost the chances of forcing his return from Japan to stand trial for alleged crimes against humanity. Congress voted 75-0 in support of a congressional probe charging Fujimori knew about the 1991 murder of 15 partygoers in Lima and the 1992 killing of nine university students and a professor, paving the way for criminal proceedings to begin. Fujimori granted amnesty to some of those responsible in the La Cantuta murders. And this news from Crawford, Texas. The White House has announced the appointment of Ana Perez, a former Chevron Corporation executive and First Lady's press secretary, to be head of the National Security Council's media office. She and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice were colleagues at Chevron, where Perez managed media relations, speech writing, employee and stockholder communications. At the White House, her official title will be Deputy Assistant to President Bush and Counselor to the National Security Advisor for Communications after serving as press secretary to First Lady Barbara Bush. Subsequently, she moved to Los Angeles to become head of media relations for Creative Artists Agency and later vice president of California Government Relations at Walt Disney Corporation. A federal appeals court panel ruled yesterday that the admissions policy of the University of Georgia, which gives a slight preference in bonus points to non-white applicants, was unconstitutional. The three judges on the panel said the university failed to prove that having more non-white students on campus would lead to a more diverse student body. Yesterday's ruling is the latest of several court decisions barring race as a factor in school admissions. Congressional budget analysts warned in a report made public yesterday that the economic downturn and President Bush's tax cut package would force the federal government to spend $9 billion from the Social Security surplus this year and billions more over the next 3 years. The report from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found the overall federal budget surplus projected for the fiscal year that ends September 30th had dropped to $153 billion, down $122 billion from his estimate in May. As a result, the report said $30 billion would have to be taken from the Social Security surplus over three of the next 4 years to pay for government operations. Hoping to slow the Bush administration's missile defense program, several environmental groups plan to file a lawsuit today, asserting that the Pentagon's plans for a missile defense test range in the Pacific would violate federal environmental rules. The suit contends the Pentagon must conduct a detailed analysis of the environmental impact of missile testing on Alaska, California, Hawaii, and other places in the proposed test range. Such environmental impact statements can take well over a year to complete. The Pentagon had planned to start construction on portions of the sprawling test range in Alaska and elsewhere early next year. If a federal judge orders the military to produce the impact statement, it would be a potentially serious setback to the administration's efforts to have an emergency anti-missile system operating from Alaska by as early as 2004. The Natural Resources Defense Council is spearheading the lawsuit, along with Greenpeace, Physicians for Social Responsibility, Alaska Public Interest Research Group, and an array of Alaskan environmental and arms control groups. Former East Timorese resistance leader Xanana Gusmão has announced he will seek the presidency of East Timor when it becomes independent next year. Gusmão's announcement comes as East Timor prepares to hold its first elections for a constitutional assembly on Thursday. Gusmão's former party of Fretilin is expected to dominate the elections. Iraqi opposition groups will open a new front in their battle to topple Saddam Hussein when a satellite television program financed by the United States goes on the air in a few days to beam news, political profiles, and even call-in shows and music videos throughout the region. Under the logo Liberty TV, the Iraqi opposition satellite channel will begin operating from London, perhaps as soon as Thursday, with an hour-long daily segment that opposition members said was to expand in coming months. Funds for the television channel were provided by Congress and are administered by the State Department. About $1 million was spent on cameras in a broadcast studio in London. The cost of sending the signal via satellite and stationary orbit over Ireland is $1.3 million a year. The signal, which cannot be jammed from Iraq, reaches those with a satellite dish throughout the Middle East, as well as Europe, much of Africa, and the east coast of the United States. The opposition, citing figures generally confirmed by U.S. officials, estimates between 20 to 60% of the Iraqi population has access to satellite TV. Corporate parents, corporate town, I know every TV set that has a lid. They preach that I should save the world. They pray that I won't do a better job of it. Pray that I won't do a better job. So tonight I turn your station on. Calling Memphis, I am calling, can you hear me?
pretend. I know every TV set that has a lid. They preach that I should save the world. They pray that I won't do a better job of it. Pray that I won't do a better job. So tonight I turned your station on, just so I'd be understood. Instead another voice said I was just too late and just no good.
Dar Williams singing Are You Out There? When I met her at a fundraiser for WJFF, a Pacifica affiliate, the only water-powered station in the country, she said the song was inspired by her growing up listening to Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. And you are listening to Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, the citizens of Salem, Massachusetts are joining forces with Greenpeace to protest the proposed expansion of a coal-fired power plant owned by the energy giant Pacific Gas and Electric, or PG&E, made famous in the movie Erin Brockovich. The residents say they've elevated cancer rates as a result of the contamination of their air and drinking water by the plant, which has emitted chromium-6, the same contaminant which poisoned the wells of residents of Hinckley, California, where Erin Brockovich first went after PG&E. The Bush administration has touted coal as a central feature of its new energy policy. The Bush energy plan would throw billions of dollars into building new coal-fired power plants across the country and exempt many older plants from meeting federal emission standards. The Senate will take up the Bush plan in the coming weeks. The PG&E coal plant in Salem Harbor is a case study in globalization, not only of corporate power, but also of grassroots resistance. The Salem plant will soon buy nearly all its coal from Intercor, a wholly owned subsidiary of Exxon in Colombia. Intercor operates the largest strip mine in Latin America, Cerrejón Norte, and has been working to displace indigenous people in the province of La Guajira in order to facilitate the expansion of the mine. In our next segment, we'll go down to that area of Colombia to talk about the relationship of the Afro-Colombians who live there, as well as the Colombian military and police with the Exxon subsidiary. But we first go to Salem, Massachusetts, to the community that is protesting today. Lori Ehrlich is with us, a leader of HealthLinked base in Salem, Massachusetts. But first to Kurt Davies, director of Greenpeace's U.S. Global Warming Campaign. Kurt, why today's protest?
Well, we're here in Salem to pull the disguise off the Bush energy plan, which is basically a subsidy for dirty power and dirty industries in this country. It's bad energy policy, bad environmental policy, and will make global warming much worse.
Can you describe for listeners in Hawaii and Washington State and California who are not familiar with the area, where exactly are we talking about? Place Salem, Massachusetts for us.
Just north of Boston on the ocean. It's as much as you need to know. It's a beautiful little community here. The Salem Power Station is one of hundreds of antique power stations around this country that have an exemption from our Clean Air Act, allowing them to emit up to 10 times as much pollution as modern technology. There's been community resistance here for years over health issues. There's also a state battle over air pollution from these power plants. There are interregional conflicts over acid rain from Midwestern power plants dumping on Canada. And then there's a national fight over air pollution. All these are dwarfed by the fight over global warming. This plant emits 4.5 million tons of carbon dioxide a year. It has a truly global impact.
Lori Ehrlich, can you tell us how you got involved with this?
Personally, my two children at the time, 4 years ago, were 2 and 5, and they had been playing outside on the back deck, and they came running into the kitchen where there's a white tile floor, and I looked down at the floor, and there were these little tiny black footprints all over my white floor. And I asked them if they had been playing in the yard, and they said no. And I went outside, and sure enough, my deck was covered with soot. Now, I don't live in Salem. I live in Marblehead, which is, we share the harbor with Salem, where the plant is located. And it's about a mile away as the crow flies. And I called up the plant. They sent an insurance adjuster down. They took samples of what was on my deck. And a month later, they sent me a letter saying that they'd be happy to power wash my deck for me. And the cause of the soot was likely from them. I held that letter in my hand. I looked down at my kids, and I thought, who's going to power wash their lungs? They're breathing this stuff. This is very bad for them. And right around the same time, a very brave and courageous group of ladies was discussing at a friend's funeral, a local activist who had died of breast cancer, why are so many of our friends getting sick and getting cancer? And this group was beginning to form. My friend Lynn Nadeau and my friend Mark Rogers were beginning to form this group, HealthLink. It didn't have a name at that point. And I hooked up with them, and this was, you know, over 4 years ago. So we've been at this battle for a long time, but perseverance seems to be paying off.
How was HealthLink founded?
HealthLink was founded just, it began in people's living rooms. We just were a bunch of people that were concerned about local cancer statistics. The city of Salem that houses the plant has the highest lung cancer rate in the state, according to the Mass Cancer Registry. Our asthma rates are off the charts. And living in these communities, we're appalled at PG&E, who owns this plant, who has a good neighbor policy of washing our boats for us if we ask. They wash our cars, and they power wash our decks if we ask them to. The Harvard School of Public Health also studied this plant in Salem and another one in Brayton Point, which is called Brayton Point in Massachusetts, both owned by PG&E and both the worst polluters in all of New England. And they came up with some interesting statistics. These two plants alone, the pollution from these two plants, are responsible for 43,000 asthma attacks per year, 300,000 daily incidents of upper respiratory symptoms, and 159 premature deaths. So when we heard that statistic, 159 people losing their lives prematurely per year because of these plants, it just fueled our fire. And we have, like a stone gathering moss, we have just been rolling along, gathering strength as we go.
Kurt Davies of Greenpeace, we're going to go down to Columbia right now. Can you connect Salem to what's happening in Columbia?
Well, yeah, and the PG&E is the connection. And when we started looking at this power plant and doing a little research on it, PG&E is obviously an interesting thing to look at. It's all about the coal, after all. We have to stop coal to stop global warming. It's 25% of the world's power and 37% of the carbon dioxide. Coal-fired electricity in the U.S. emits more carbon dioxide than the entire transportation sector, planes, trains, and automobiles. So we looked at where the coal comes from. They've burned coal, according to people here from who know and have been watching this plant for 50 years. They burn coal from all over the world. Right now they seem to be burning coal from West Virginia, where they ripped the mountaintops off. But we discovered that in March they signed a contract to buy probably 2.5 million tons of coal from Colombia and Venezuela next year, and it would be their exclusive source of coal for these two power plants. And when you dig a little deeper and you look at what's happening in Colombia, where is the coal coming from? The coal mine in Colombia, which is the largest in all of Latin America, is operated by a state-owned corporation called Carbocol, the Carbones de Colombia. The mine itself is operated by Intercor, which is a subsidiary of ExxonMobil. It turns out that this project is causing major problems there that you'll hear about in a minute. Then the Venezuelan coal, the mine there is part owned by Shell. So this is truly global corporate power. This is the same as all the other fights we hear about. It's not about U.S. energy independence, as Bush would like us to believe. Coal is a domestic energy source. If these plants are burning foreign coal, which is being mined in places damaging people's lives around the world, it's irreprehensible, and it adds onto the stain of coal.
Can you describe today's protests, what your plans are for them?
Well, we have a number of speakers, from grandparents to children to activists locally and statewide activists, who will all be talking about their perspectives on this plant and on this fight. We intend to march from the city of Salem to the power plant and deliver a demand that the power plant, instead of building additional coal-fired units on site, invest in clean energy, invest in wind energy. One of the largest offshore wind power plants is about to be built off the coast of Massachusetts, and we want more of that and not more coal.
And the traces of the outlines of bodies on the sidewalk?
Yeah, that this was to illustrate the Harvard School of Public Health study, where they said that 159 people will die prematurely per year. And we have cut out from black paper chalk outlines of bodies, and we're planning on laying these bodies on the ground on the sidewalk from Derby Wharf, where we'll be, where the Rainbow Warrior is actually in view, all the way to the plant on the sidewalk, to illustrate how many people per year will die because of this plant. We also have something called Grandfathers Against Grandfathering, which is a petition that I created to honor my dad, who was my children's grandfather, because he passed away this past January from a brain tumor. And we will be gathering signatures for that petition and hooking it up with a letter and sending a message to the CEO of PG&E once we get to the plant.
Can you explain what grandfathering of the plants means?
Sure. There are about 500 plants throughout the United States that were given a special exemption from the Clean Air Act of 1970, where because they were old and tired, and it seemed like they were operating under a technology that would be obsolete someday soon, they were given a break from tighter emission standards. And these plants have only become, you know, the darlings of their owners' portfolios because they can produce so cheaply, and they have and they can upgrade internally. They found that they've upgraded internally, but not their emission control. So it's time for their grandfather status to be removed from these plants, and they need to comply with the rules that all, you know, newer plants need to comply with. So I created this petition because I think that grandfathers have a special perspective on life, having, you know, really experienced three generations of their own family. They understand how fragile life is, and they care very deeply about their grandchildren. Grandchildren should be able to breathe freely, and I've gotten tremendous support. I have signatures from 43 states in the country. I have 8 foreign countries that have signed on, and you know, hundreds and hundreds of signatures.
Lori Ehrlich, if people want to get in touch with HealthLink, where can they call?
The best thing is to try our website, which is www.healthlink.org.
And Kurt Davies of Greenpeace's U.S. Global Warming Campaign?
We're at GreenpeaceUSA, one word, .org.
I want to thank you both for being with us as we head down now to Columbia. You're listening to Democracy Now! Back in a minute.